Welcome to MGO Podcast 9.18. I was throwing up and now I'm not, so here we are. Let's do a podcast. Hello, the MGO podcast returns from a long hiatus, health-related, mostly. I mean, Ace is
somewhat ennui-related sometimes, well, maybe a little bit.
I mean...
But yeah, health-related for the most part.
So I had a GI thing, which I will not go into the details of. I will just tell you that at one point I was lying on the couch and my son woke up from his nap in a very... I could tell he was upset, and I go upstairs, and it's because he's voided the contents of his stomach onto his bed. And my solution to this was to take him downstairs and clean him up as much as I could and then lie down in my bed, knowing that he would throw up in it, because that was my best option at the time. I had no other... I couldn't do anything. I could lie there in a place that I thought was relatively easy to clean up. That wasn't the floor. So that was a fun week or so.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Well, it wasn't as bad after the first day, but I didn't really have a whole lot of energy to do anything. And then Ace has been battling Indian Maharajas.
Yes.
And their war elephants.
Indeed.
For a couple months now. Metaphorically, I guess. Anyway, let's talk some stuff. There's been a lot of stuff. We're going to start with basketball because it is both not depressing and widely known and appreciated. Some hockey less so. So Michigan beats Ohio State 74-62 to run their win streak to 3. And they're starting to get off the 8-9 line, even at the most skeptical places.
Yes.
So Jerry Palm has them as a 7 now.
Getting another win in the quadrant one bucket, as annoying as those distinctions are, is nice to get.
I mean, I wrote
even a book. If it a win at home over Ohio State should not be considered the same thing as a road game at Purdue.
Yeah, exactly. Especially like, you know, a road game at Penn State, even though they're doing fairly well, a road game at Maryland. Exactly the same to the NCAA in their buckets as going to Michigan State and winning. So Michigan has a quadrant one problem largely because most of their quadrant run games to date have been top 10-ish teams on the road.
Yeah, and of course the two extremely narrow losses to Purdue
right.
are still really annoying, as it turns out.
Yeah, you flip one of those and Michigan is probably a Sweet 16 seed right now.
Yeah, looking at a potential top 4 seed, even in a weak Big Ten.
Because we were looking at Ohio State's resume, because it's really easy to compare now, because they're in the same conference, same number of losses, and Michigan has a win at Michigan State. Ohio State has a win at Purdue, and then a home win at Michigan State versus wins versus UCLA and at Texas. That's basically most of the separation on those resumes, and that is probably a seed line better for Ohio State.
Yeah.
But if Michigan has one of those Purdue games, they're probably a top 4 seed at this point, and they'd probably have to defend that by winning both their last couple games. But, yeah, it's a big swing from early in the year, but what are you going to do?
Yeah, and I mean, if you told us at certain points this year that this team would have a shot at the 5 line, I think we'd be taking it.
Yeah, they're on the 5 line at both Lunardi and Howie Schwab's brackets now.
Yeah.
And they seem to be more, I mean, my guess is that they're looking at strength of record instead of the bins and stuff, because Michigan's strength of record is 15th now.
Yeah, it's real good.
And... so if you're looking, I think Palm is more looking at like what the committee is probably going to do.
Yes.
And the other guys are like, this is what they should do. And given what happened last year.
We might see a late correction there.
We'll see. I was heartened by the fact that the head of the selection committee gave an interview to the Omaha newspaper. And he said that basically that non-conference strength schedule was garbage and he wants it removed.
Yeah, that was nice. So, that was an encouraging quote to see.
So I hope that does hold serve there, because Michigan is like 271 in that
metric. The only downside of that is that then we might continue seeing Michigan schedule Houston Baptist forever and ever.
You know, it doesn't bother me, except that it kills their seeding by a line every year.
Man, those games are boring.
Yeah, I know, but if that wasn't the case, I'd be like, eh, whatever. Also, I think that next year you're going to see a couple fewer of those, because the Big Ten goes to 20 games.
Yeah, that'll be nice.
So... I don't,
as long as they cut those games and not like a quality game or two.
Yeah, I can't imagine that you would cut the quality games, because the NCAA does put a high priority on you competing in those departments. Anyway, as for the game itself, Michigan kind of has a comfortable lead for most of it.
Yes.
Where Jayshon Tate is just keeping Ohio State in it with second chance buckets. Nobody on Ohio State can make a single shot from the field. It seems like they shoot 37%, except on non-putbacks for the game.
Yeah.
And Michigan is a kind of scuffling, but they shoot really well inside the arc, and then Jordan Poole comes off the bench and is good Jordan Poole.
Yes, he is on fire.
He's ace and bender Jordan
Poole. Yes, he is the version of Jordan Poole that I believe in, full-heartedly.
That you see 100% of the time, yes. No matter what.
So, in my reality, that was Jordan Poole doing his thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, he had a really nice performance off the bench, obviously. I think that's going to be really important going forward, because the one guy who kind of still scuffled in this game a little bit was Charles Matthews.
Yeah.
And Poole is officially eating into some of Matthews' minutes. I mean, Matthews only plays 25 in this game. He is no longer like the alpha in this offense, which is probably a good thing for this team.
I mean, given his efficiency, yes.
Yeah. I mean, he's been by far Michigan's least efficient player against good teams among the main rotation guys. A lot of that's because of just he doesn't fit a lead player role very well, considering his ball handling just isn't really up to snuff for that.
Well, the main problem for Matthews in this game was his turnovers.
Yes.
So he has 4 of Michigan's 7 turnovers. And increasingly, this is kind of like the bugaboo.
Yeah, Michigan is incredible at not turning the ball over, despite the fact that one guy is turning the ball over far too often, I would say. Matthews is up to an almost 25% turnover rate against top 50 teams. Oof. And that's especially from a wing and a guy who does not have a point guard level assist rate. I mean, we've watched him play. A lot of that is him dribbling into a crowd and then having the ball raked out.
It is strange that I feel like Matthews drives into a crowd, he gets the ball raked out, and he never protects the ball, and he never gets fouled. I expect for some level of those reach-ins that they actually hit arm and they get called.
Sure.
And I mean, for Matthews, I don't think it happens.
I think he doesn't get the benefit of the doubt on that a lot, because officials know. I mean, officials see that a few times.
I don't actually
times.
Think he's being fouled. It's just kind of remarkable to me that he is able to...
because you also see it, he has trouble... he double catches a lot of passes. They need to get him on a jugs machine.
Okay.
He just does not have very good hands.
He has J.C. Mathis disease.
So
there's four people who know who this is.
Yeah. I'm one of the few who remember the Virginia transfer of...
He was a Virginia Tech transfer.
Virginia Tech transfer of yesteryear.
That was the most unfounded vague hope that was ever offered Michigan basketball. Anyway.
Well, Charles Matthews has done better than that already, at least. But I think it would be a very positive development if his usage started getting transferred elsewhere and he ended up fading back to more of a GR3 role. And along those lines, and the focus of your game column, Muhammad Ali Abdurrahman has started stepping into that role in a way that we've wanted to see.
Yeah, so if you remove the 2 Northwestern games, which were all against zone, he's actually creeping towards that 24% that is kind of like the lead dog indicator on KenPom, at least for Michigan. There's a 20.
Yeah, by KenPom, I mean, Michigan's had lead dogs that have like 22 or 23% usage. So.
There's a 28% category that never, ever comes up for Michigan. So he's been able to increase his usage without increasing his turnovers in this 7-game stretch where he's up to a flat 20% usage.
Which is pretty incredible considering I think he's got the country's leading turnover rate.
He's number two.
Number two.
Some guy on Wichita State is a hair better. And he does venture inside the line. I looked it up on Ken Palm.
I wanted to know if he was just a shooter.
And I was like, this guy probably has 200 threes and 10 twos. Not the case. So it's actually legitimate.
But yeah, if we could mash together Mar's handle and Matthews' athleticism somehow, like that's the thing Matthews needs. But I mean, the turnover rate really is extraordinary.
It is. And it's kind of the thing where it's like, well, if his turnover rate is at 5%, can we offload some more usage onto him, or is he like actually maxing out at the rate at which he can be effective? It's kind of hard to tell.
Yeah, I mean, he's Michigan's tough shot guy, and you got to think that if that's kind of the worst case scenario, and he's pretty darn good at those tough shots, then I think you can offload some of that usage to him, and then you also get the advantage of, I think if Michigan's going to pull some upsets come tourney time or make a run in the Big Ten tournament, it's going to be because of this ability to create a shot gap.
Yeah.
And a possession gap. And Matthews is kind of messing with that a little bit right now. And if you shift that to Mar,
yeah.
You've got a really incredibly turnover-averse team. Michigan's number two in the country while still running a lot of offense through Matthews. And if you take him off the floor, they just don't cough the ball up. And you've got the three-point gap that they have been able to consistently generate for the last 2 years. I think that's how you make up for, you know, not necessarily having the off-the-dribble three-point threat that Michigan had last year. Although I should mention that Jordan Poole hit one of those.
I think it was two.
Yeah, it might have been two, you know. Yeah, he's I think Rachman also canned an off-the-dribble three, which is an interesting development.
I actually looked this up on Hoop Math, though. Rachman is really, really good late in the shot clock when he's driving to the hoop.
Mm-hmm.
He's like 69% when he gets to the rim.
Late clock threes, not so much.
Late clock threes, which are about half his late clock shots, are under 30%.
That's not ideal.
So, notwithstanding that Purdue game, Mar is not an unassisted three guy.
Yeah.
So you're going to have to figure out what to do late in the shot clock, or you just can defense up on people now, which is weird.
It's crazy. They're doing it. They continue to do it. I mean,
so
a fair amount of it is the other part of like the possession gap, like overall team strategy thing, which is that they have this incredible transition defense and almost never let opponents get into transition in the first place.
Yeah.
And so they're playing so much half court defense that And at that point, their weakness is in the post, and teams are having to play really inefficient basketball to try to beat Michigan, and it's not working very well.
Yeah, so Kata Bates' job in this game is 2-for-11-for-3, being checked by a freshman, Isaiah Livers,
yeah,
and Duncan Robinson.
Yes.
And this is after Duncan Robinson did absolute work on Tyler Cook in the Iowa game.
Yes.
He has his flaws. He has his problems, but if you're trying to post him up now, it's like, it's not really going that well. You remember the Michigan State game where they're trying to post Jaren Jackson up on him for 15 minutes and it just didn't really work?
I mean, I was poking around Synergy earlier today, and the numbers back this up. Robinson's risen from a pretty atrocious defender by their standards to pretty darn close to average, and the main thing has just been a shift in the number of possessions that he is defending on the perimeter versus the number of possessions that he's defending in the post. Since he's playing a lot more of the four this year, he's defending the post more, and he's a relatively big body. You know, he's 6'8", 220 or so. Like, he can hold his own physically, and you're not asking him to move his feet as much, which is his main weakness as a defender. He can get by as a guy who just kind of knows where to position himself, and he's done a solid job of, you know, I haven't noticed too many times where, you know, one of Mo Wagner's weaknesses is that a lot of times he'll give up a really good post position right off the bat.
Yeah.
That hasn't really happened with Robinson, and there have been guys who should be capable of doing that to him, and it's not happening. So he's a smart off-ball defender, and I think that that helps a lot. And this year, it's just because of the shift in position for him, he's less of a negative on the defensive end, and in some games has become a positive.
And then the other half of this is that Xavier Simpson gives it to CJ Jackson.
He does. He sure does.
And Jackson is, you know, kind of a middle of the road point guard, but he scores 3 points on 5 shot attempts, no assists. That's the first time he's been blanked in assists all season. 3 turnovers. You know, they have Andrew Dockich bringing the ball up the floor just so that Simpson is on Dockich for a period of time.
Yeah.
Although Michigan sort of cannily puts Poole on Dockich.
Yes.
For large
yes, they
this
do.
Game. Because it's like, well, that'll be fine.
Yeah, and Poole's also good at jumping passing lanes, so they probably liked that he could wander. And they probably knew he would do that anyway.
Sure. I mean, I don't want to necessarily dump on Dockich, but like it's unbelievable that Ohio State is like looking for a 4 or 5 seed and they're playing Dockich.
We're not dumping on Dockich. We're praising Chris Holtmann.
Okay. He's playing like 20 minutes a game.
Yeah.
And he has 8% usage.
And yeah, because they don't have guards.
They have nobody.
They start 4 forwards and C.J. Jackson. Jayshon Tate is effectively their backup point guard when it's not Dockich. Which is a large reason why, as you noted, his offensive rebounding has gone down. But
except in this one, yeah.
Except in this one. But he's just a real funky matchup. I think that's largely why they're a decent, not just decent, a good team, is that they're just a really, really weird team to match up against defensively, because you've got Jayshon Tate basically playing the two in terms of how you have to match up against them defensively, unless you have somebody that you can dump off on Andre Wesson.
I mean,
which you usually kind of can, but you still, even having a 3-guard Jayshon Tate, you want a power forward guarding that guy.
That's true.
And instead, you know, Michigan's got to go with Charles Matthews, or even like Jordan Poole at times. And Tate's going to physically have an advantage over those guys because he's a truly unique player.
Just a deeply bizarre individual. And he's been like that since he was a recruit. Michigan actually recruited him, and everybody was like, why?
Yeah.
Because he just doesn't fit, right? So.
Yeah, I mean, it was like recruiting a Zach Novak who didn't shoot threes, but.
Right.
But it fits with Ohio State this year. They're a strange team, but they're a good team.
Yep. And fading back a little bit, so Michigan has the Iowa game. The big story in that is that Duncan Robinson goes 6 of 8 from 3. The game before that, Duncan Robinson goes something good from 3, 4, 7, I think.
4 of 7.
4 of 7. And he kind of gets shut out against Ohio State, but like he's lurking back there as a guy who, if he gets the right matchup, if he gets a defense that doesn't close out on him very effectively, or Michigan's able to get to the hoop, like that might be the recipe for a tourney upset there, where they just get on fire from three largely because Robinson can go off. A la Nick Stauskas versus Florida.
Indeed.
Man, that was fun.
Enjoy that. Good times.
They let her have 6 straight 3s from the exact same spot on the floor. What were they thinking? Probably coordinated by Jim McElwain. Anyway,
I just to blame a defensive issues on them.
Yes, I am.
In basketball.
Yes, I am. And I'm completely serious.
In 2013.
About all of it. Completely serious about all of it. And then before that, the Troll Center at Michigan beats Wisconsin.
Who's not good at all.
Oh, my God. They're so bad. I do kind of understand, because you look at the guys that they have to put out there on the court, and they're all extremely one-dimensional. So you have...
I thought you were going to say extremely white.
They do have a couple of... they do have a couple of immensely punchable faces. But they only play like 6 guys against Michigan. And like... 3 of them are freshmen. You've got Happ, who's an outstanding player.
I'm looking at this box score again. I don't know who half these guys are for Wisconsin. I've watched them like several times this year and still half these names, like, you could tell me that they that KenPom switched these out and I wouldn't know.
I was disappointed that
who's Aleem Ford? Who the hell is that?
I wrote this game preview, so I know. He's a just the shooter.
Okay.
Who's like a 46% 3-point shooter who's 6'8" and a freshman. Doesn't do anything else. And Khalil Iverson is like a Brandon Dawson.
I know. I remember team. Khalil Iverson because he occasionally gets an obnoxious number of rebounds against Michigan.
Yeah, and Brevin Pritzel is the guy with the mouthpiece who just looked.
Well, I remember him because he's got like a peak Wisconsin name and face. So
I thought T.J. Schlunt was the peak Wisconsin name, but he only
one's pretty good.
I was disappointed.
They've also got an Andy Van Vliet. They're really Wisconsin'd out, except for the fact that they're just terrible.
Yeah.
I think it was Smoothitron who tweeted earlier this year that watching Ethan Happ play on Wisconsin is like watching a 2-hour long ASPCA commercial, and it was like, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if I've ever seen this kind of number, but he had 45% usage in that game.
Yeah.
And his O rating was okay.
He took 23 twos, and nobody else had more than 5.
That's just because Michigan was just like, Ethan Happ is going to beat us, or he's not going to beat us. And
as it turns out,
it's a fair job.
Yeah, I mean, it's just tough as a 6'10 post player to single-handedly beat a team.
Yeah.
When your next best option is Brevin Pritzel.
Brevin Pritzel. Really does sound like an Idiocracy snack food.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not like his fault. I'm just telling you.
One of my favorite things about, well, not really. One of the things I've enjoyed about watching BTN games this year has been them trying really, really hard to convince people that Brad Davison is a promising freshman.
He's
real scrappy.
He's
playing through that shoulder injury.
He's done pretty well for a freshman who's got just poop all around him.
That's true, but it's just, man.
You know, he's also, like, I can just tell by his face.
He's going to be good eventually.
By the time he's a junior, he will never miss against Michigan in the last 4 minutes of the game.
He will be that guy.
He's going to be...
But who else are they going
to... He's going to be Kipper Nichols, except Wisconsin version.
What happens when Ethan Happ leaves?
Oh. I mean, they are young. I don't know.
It looks like it might just be the end of an era for them. I don't know.
And like I appreciate that on one level, but on another level... I don't think that's good for the Big Ten.
No.
Because having Wisconsin up there as a team that recruited nobody and was still a consistent tourney presence, like who's going to replace them? I don't know.
Indiana should rise back up.
Well, Indiana is not like a team like...
But they're kind of assumed that they should be top
right, yeah.
Tier.
Like, Indiana is a team that is down, and that's one of the reasons that the league is down. But
you're looking at, like, I mean, hopefully Maryland solidifies themselves, but other than that, I mean...
Illinois, I like Brad Underwood. They're bad this year, but
they're pretty darn bad this year. But I mean, that was a good hire because otherwise you're looking at Penn State and Northwestern as your hopes there, or a Minnesota program that has taken several turns in wrong directions.
I do annually convince myself that next year Iowa is going to be pretty good.
And yeah,
I've done that again.
You have managed to do that. There is some precedent for a Fran turnaround. But it was like when he first got there.
If they were only like just not butt on defense, they'd be a tourney team.
Yeah, they're real butt on defense. I know. Though.
What are you going to do?
They're 250th in defense. They are almost at Rutgers offense level of defense.
Their transition defense is just like, I don't care about Michigan's offensive rebounding. I understand now, John Beilein, why you just hate offensive rebounds because... Good God.
Yeah, if that's the alternative, never do that.
No, never do that. So Michigan has Penn State up next and Tony Carr. And Tony Carr is the kind of guy who has 700 threes a year and half of them are unassisted. He's hitting 46%.
Yeah, which is ridiculous if you watch Penn State and see how he has to create these shots for himself.
Nearly 30% usage. And this is a game where it's like, all right, I don't know if this is a good Xavier Simpson game, though, because this dude is 6'5". So
Yeah, we'll have to see. I mean, it's that is kind of a tough matchup for him. Shep Garner is a guy who makes more sense for him height-wise, but that's taking you from their highest usage guy to a dude who just stands in the corner, and that's a huge waste of Xavier Simpson.
I mean, that's
Simpson.
The dude that Poole should check, Shep Garner.
Yeah.
That's like a Poole guy.
Yeah. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see who they put on him. I'm guessing it'll be Rock, and they'll...
It could be Charles Matthews.
It could be Matthews too. Although I could also see Matthews checking either Josh Reeves or Lamar Stevens.
I mean
Penn State's another team that's kind of, I mean, like Ohio State has got a lot of like bigger wings or forwards that can play down.
Stevens is a guy who's like, I mean, fine. He's got high usage, but he's at 103 O rating. You just throw Duncan Robinson on them and dare them to post that dude up. That's my game plan.
Yeah, I mean, I would be fine with that.
And then maybe like give Matthews the carte blanche to spend as much energy as he wants on defense.
Well, we haven't mentioned the like biggest key to this game.
Oh,
how much Mo Wagner can just piss off Mike Watkins.
So Mike Watkins has a bit of a rambunctious history this year.
Yeah, he got filmed on the sideline during a game that he was like had either just fouled out of or just picked up an auto bench foul on, and he was like kind of getting into it with a other student manager or assistant or somebody in a dress shirt on the bench.
Right.
Gave him a little shove, and that didn't seem great. And he's just against Purdue in their most recent game, he only plays 9 minutes because he just cannot. Not foul, and he's very visibly taken out of his game. And then today when I was kind of going through their KenPom page, he's gotten 4 or 5 fouls in all but one of their Big Ten losses. And in every single one of their wins except for one, he's had 3 or fewer.
He's shooting 72% from the floor.
He is a really, really talented player
in conference play. So that's not.
Yeah, he's a good rim protector, a very good rim protector. He was top 10 as a shot blocker last year nationally, and he's top 35 this year. But you've got a.
How does this guy end up at Penn State?
I would assume the head case aspect has something to do with it.
That's not going to stop other teams.
That's true. I would take this kind of a head case.
Well, Beeline would.
Beeline would not. But and you can see why, because he does get taken out of games, and so I think that there are dual keys to this game, which are can Mo Wagner make that matchup. Go Michigan's way when they're out there, and can Mo Wagner make that matchup go really Michigan's way by just getting Watkins on the bench? And I'm pretty optimistic that Wagner can get in Watkins' head.
Sure.
Like he's
a Twitter magnet.
He's a trash talker. There's been some interesting Mo Wagner lip reading this year.
Yes.
When he's,
Ant Wright was retweeting a bunch of Ohio State fans talking about Wagner on Twitter. I'm like, yeah, that's about right.
Yeah. So if I was rooting for not Michigan and they were playing against Michigan, I would not like that guy at all. I would annoying. Hate that guy.
Yeah. That's
love that guy. Absolutely love it. It's great.
That's one of the like the biggest like hate love swing in the Big Ten, I think, currently. Like, nobody's, like, mad at Ethan Happ, right?
No, and everybody just feels bad for him.
Right, yeah, it's like, yeah, that's a good player.
And even, like Nick Ward is... Tom Izzo hates him more than anybody else, so...
Yeah.
And Purdue, I mean, I guess, like, you know, Haas has the Drago thing going.
He does, but, like, I don't know. I don't hate him for being just an enormous brick of muscle. With an Evan Dragon.
No,
face.
And Matt Painter's very likable.
Yeah.
So there isn't.
I bet there's someone in Indiana that I've just forgotten that I hate. Because there always is. But we played them like once back in December, so they're barely even.
Yeah,
in
we just. Also, they.
They suck, but there's one guy on that team who's like, what's his face? The Trey guy who's just the most annoying guy on the planet.
Dude, I think they graduated all the annoying guys.
There's definitely one. There's some guy who just drives you crazy. I guarantee you that there's someone in Indiana.
They have a McRoberts. Maybe that's it.
Yeah, he's either like a kid from small town Indiana who shoots 85% from three, or there's just like...
Yeah, he's shooting 33% from... Okay. That's the thing. Nobody's making threes
that's
for
true.
Him. They just can't be annoying this year.
Well, this is definitely a productive conversation that we should have had.
Yeah, no, this is definitely gone in the right direction.
All right, we are going to take a break, come back, and talk about something else.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go! Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present The Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
It's painless, it's online, it's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
If you're looking for a mortgage and you're a Michigan fan, there's only one place to go. HomeSure Lending. Both fair and honest, HomeSure Lending is local, efficient, and small enough so you'll work directly with the owner, Matt Demarest. Matt bleeds maize and blue, and so does his family.
Hey, this is Matt Demarest. I'm the owner of HomeSure Lending. We're a small, local, family-owned business, and so I'm here with a couple of members of my family, Cooper and Colby, my boys. Cooper, how old are you, buddy?
9.
Colby, what about you?
7.
Who's the best team in the whole country?
Michigan!
Can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue!
We're a family business here in Ann Arbor. I'd love to serve you and your family with any of your mortgage needs.
Located at 2723 South State Street in Ann Arbor. For more info, go to homeshorelending.com. That's HomeSureLending. You can reach Matt at 734-531-9950. HomeSure Lending, NMLS 1161358, Equal Housing Lender.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
Our sponsors, which are Underground Printing, The Bow Store, The Residence in Ann Arbor Downtown, HomeSure Lending, Peak Wealth Management, the Alumni Association of the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Lantana Hummus, Human Element, Ecotelligent Homes, and Michigan Law Grad. They wanted to make me do a recruiting segment, and I didn't want to do it, but I agreed to do a segment that was just all a ball of crap. So this is the ball of crap segment. Thank you, sponsors.
And I will see if we can get a title sponsor for that one.
I want to start off with USA Curling, which whenever I turn it on, they are doing something obscene. Curling is a game where you throw rocks down the ice
It's a shuffleboard.
Yes, and you hit other rocks, and it's really cool, and there's all kinds of geometry, and there's, like, curves, and it's very mathematical. Except in the United States.
You would love it like this.
And I turned on the women's game, and they had the hammer, which is the last rock at the end. Big advantage.
Yeah, like the whole thing is like you don't blow it when you you got to get your point when you have the hammer.
It's so bad when the other team scores when you have the hammer. It's called,
it's like getting your serve broken.
It's called a steal.
Yeah,
so that's a steal of one. It's kind of bad.
Yeah,
a steal of two is a freaking disaster.
Yeah,
and the U.S. women start off with a steal of two for the other team, which was Japan, I think. Another steal of two in the second end. And then in the third end, a steal of three. So they're down.
That seems bad.
7-0 after three ends. And I'm just like, I know exactly what this is like. I'm a Michigan fan. I don't need to watch any more of this. And then I started watching the fourth end, and they almost gave up another steal of three. And I was like, they had a draw to the button to like get their 1 point. And then not have the hammer. And I was like, all right, just miss this. It's funny if you miss it. It's sad if you make it, but they make it. And every time I see like a curling score, it's like 8-2. It's really hard to lose 8-2. You have to like basically clonk your heads together when you're trying to throw a rock down the ice. And it's just every 4 years, it's just like I look at the state of U.S. curling and I'm like, how can John Schuster be the best skip this country has? We have 300 million people.
It is always the same dude.
It's the same dude. It's always the same dude.
It's the same dude.
And I talked to Jerry about it because Jerry's also into curling. And he's like, yeah, I mean, I watched the World Championships last year. I don't watch the World Championships. He watches the World Championships. And Schuster made the medal round. And I was like, I don't believe you. I could go look it up on Wikipedia, and it would say right there, John Schuster, you know, 7-2 gets.
And you just assume that like Jerry edited Wikipedia,
right? Yeah, I just be like, Jerry is lying on Wikipedia because that's the only.
And no one's going to go correct it,
right?
So,
nobody's like, nobody's.
No some editor. Canadian would correct it,
maybe. But anyway, so that's my Winter Olympics life.
And signing day happened in there somewhere.
Whatever.
We should probably mention that.
I mean, it did, and...
And no, nothing happened.
Nothing happened.
No, absolutely. Well, Otis Reese left the class.
Right, yes.
That happened. That wasn't great.
So, yeah, we had our lowest key signing day ever, in part because it's not really signing day anymore, and in part because...
It was not a great close.
Michigan recruiting has imploded, and I don't know why, and I hope they fix it, but... I don't, like, it's a major negative, like, worse than the actual season, because you can see why the season happened.
Yeah, the season was easy to understand,
and then
for the most part.
But Michigan's recruiting is going off a cliff. Like, maybe they don't have a great class this year because of the season, but the fact that, you know, you are bringing in four defensive backs and you offer a random in-state guy to get to five defensive backs when you graduate nobody... You need tackles. You bring in two developmental tackles. You can't get anybody who's ready to go now.
Oh, and I thought when you said you need tackles, you meant defensive tackles.
Yeah. And they airball on Tyler Friday, who they've been recruiting for 65 years. And it's, you know, it's lame. And we're going to see what happens in 19. But this is like, if this happens again, you're looking at a real kind of hard ceiling on the Harbaugh era.
Yeah, and they were off to a strong start in 19, and now rumors are popping up today that Stephen Heron, one of the top 100 defensive ends that they have committed, is probably going to end up at Stanford. Alan True posted on the 247 board. He went so far as to say that he just does not see Heron ending up in the class, and it's a matter of where else he goes.
So that's great.
So there's another P. We were clinging to the 2019 fat class as the positive thing, but at least they still have Chris Hinton
and
Nolan Rumler.
And I'm not really talking about him much because, frankly, I got better things to do.
Yeah, I mean, we've heard it.
Like, I'd rather cover basketball, I'd rather cover hockey, I'd rather talk about anything else other than recruiting and...
Yeah, we've also been spread pretty thin recently. We should... I mean, I haven't been contributing a whole lot, in case y'all haven't noticed, so... Brian Schiff to basketball was not a coincidence.
But anyway, so that's recruiting. And then the other thing that's kind of the crap Sunday is they hired Jim McElwain.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had my humorous kind of shark meltdown on the roundtable. But there are a lot of good reasons to be skeptical of this hire. One, he's a position coach who can't recruit at all.
Yeah, that is worrisome, especially given the recent downturn in recruiting.
Two, I don't think he's a great dude. Like, the thing that I didn't even mention in that post is there was that kind of infamous meltdown he had on the sideline after a guy did a throat slash gesture after a touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
And he gathers the team around and just screams at this guy for a minute, looks completely unhinged. And there's a difference between Harbaugh screaming at a referee and that kind of just denigrating one of your players. It was Mark Mangino-esque. And I don't know why you'd want that associated with your program. I don't know why you'd want a guy who's so bad at press conferences. He made the shark thing into a year-long.
I mean, you shuffled that guy off to a position coach spot and that. And, McElwain's not going to be in front of the microphone nearly as much as he was last year.
No,
that's a good thing.
But I just don't think it's.
And I also don't think that Yeah, I don't think that necessarily should be super high on the consideration list for wide receivers coach in Tempe.
For making up a death threat.
I mean, that part, yeah, you might want to think about the type of person you're hiring when that comes into play.
Also, his barbecue sauce was called Mambo 3.
I mean,
which I mean, that's trivial.
You know, we've mentioned Dark Guamph with McElwain before. I would say that he is. I mean,
he does have a long track record as a wide receivers coach.
Yes, and at this point, you know, he rose above his level of competence. But I think, at least, you know, as a 10th assistant. Hopefully the rest of the guys can pick up the slack on recruiting. At least they have a guy coaching receivers now. And as a position coach, if you just looked at it and tried to ignore the weird off-field crap, he's overqualified to be a wide receivers coach. Like, that guy was a good offensive coordinator at Alabama with a similar level of talent and a similar style.
I don't know. I don't know how much that
Did also hire Doug Nussmeier and let him run his offense. So
it's kind of like, you know, you hire a guy from Bill Belichick and you don't really know what you're going to get, because the motive force for that organization is Nick Saban.
But I think there's also a similar phenomenon with Jim Harbaugh hires a guy and you're not sure how the rest of his career is going to be relevant to how he performs under Harbaugh. We've seen a fair amount of that recently.
How so?
I think we expected Drevno to be much more of a home run than he has been.
Yeah.
Jed Fish, we were pretty skeptical of coming in. I mean, he
I would
was
say we were lukewarm.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely outperformed expectations. I mean, he was a NFL guy, which was never a thing that we
That's
liked.
That's not
very
true. He was the offensive coordinator in Miami, and then he went
for a little bit. But he was, you know, his most recent stops have been in the NFL.
But he
there was
more of a college.
There
guy.
Was some skepticism there. We expected Greg Fry to come in and fix things a lot more than he did. Unfortunately, more of these are coming out negative than positive. We didn't know what to expect from Zordich, and he's been excellent.
Don Brown, good.
We knew what to expect from Don Brown, and he has still managed to surpass it somehow.
But I'd much rather have a guy with Partridge's profile. You know, he's assembled a really good high school program. He's an up-and-comer. You know he's going to get after on the recruiting trail instead of a guy. He seems like he's on the downside. He seems a little weird.
And you do worry about a too many cooks in the kitchen thing with all these pseudo offensive coordinators.
Yeah.
I'm by no means over the moon about this hire.
He's a 10th assistant. It's like, as I mentioned in the post, it's more of a missed opportunity than a pending disaster. But I'm just kind of
it wasn't the one I wanted either.
It doesn't make sense to me. Because, do you need an offensive mind? No. Look at that Ohio State game plan. Gorgeous.
Yeah.
You need someone who can recruit. You need someone who can coach wide receivers. Maybe he can do that. People talk about how, impressive his wide receivers were, but I'm when you're a head coach, that's not something that,
Yeah, he probably wasn't working too much hands-on with those guys.
I mean,
but We'll see. I mean, maybe he can get back to that. And that's more his thing than being the head coach of an SEC team. And being under the media spotlight. Because that clearly did not suit him well.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard from people kind of down in the South that, like, he's not, nobody likes him. Like, he's not going to get help from anybody down there. It's just, because he, the way he came off in press conferences, kind of, I mean, you can tell by his recruiting, right? Like, they're Michigan.
Or, like, I mean, just any interview with him. Like, right. It's not a dude you want to sit down and spend a lot of time with, necessarily.
And his recruiting is even more of a paper tiger than it looks like, because a lot of those guys were just guys that other schools backed off of. And Florida picked them up because they were desperate. And that's why a 10th year team gets suspended for doing credit card fraud.
Yeah, it's not great.
Which is the dumbest kind of fraud, because they have electronic records of all of it.
Yes. Especially when you try to report one of the cards is stolen.
So those are the guys that Florida was able to get, because people, other teams were like,
this guy might get involved in credit card fraud. I'm going to back off.
We're going to pass on that guy. He seems like a bit of a wild card. So not thrilled with that. Is there any more?
Is there bad stuff?
Is there more bad stuff?
I mean, we can briefly mention that the women's basketball team is, for the second consecutive year, like, spectacularly on their way to flaming out of the NCAA tournament, but... Yeah.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah, it's too bad.
I mean, the other two guys that they hired on offense, I guess, are a little bit more encouraging. They hired Sharone Moore from Central Michigan.
Yes.
Who's the exact kind of get-after-it, up-and-coming guy who has a good reputation in the area he's recruiting in.
And Michigan needed an in-state recruiting presence post-Wheatley.
Yeah, and so that's the kind of guy that I like as a position coach. And then they bring in Ed Warner as an offensive analyst.
Yeah, his best years were as the Ohio State's offensive line coach, and only as their offensive line coach. When they tacked offensive coordinator onto it, it didn't go so well.
No, and then he gets shuffled off to Minnesota for a year or two, and he's apparently decided that he doesn't want to row the boat.
No.
So he's here as an analyst, which is kind of an interesting position, because if he was going to be the offensive line coach, I think everybody would be like, that's actually a good hire, because his OLs at Ohio State were uniformly excellent.
Yeah, I thought, you know, as a potential 10th assistant, I was going to be quite happy with that.
Yeah, and you kind of like...
And instead he's not working hands-on with players, which is kind of odd.
Yeah, well, to some extent, like, he can identify things that need to be worked on and kind of guide people or at least help out in that. But it kind of feels like a half measure.
Yeah.
Very much directly referencing the half measures episode of Breaking Bad. Because maybe you want to see some changes here, but that's just not going to happen. And there were rumors that you were going to see Pep Hamilton take an NFL job. And it would kind of suck if the only reason that Pep Hamilton was around was because he couldn't find a landing spot. That would be unfortunate.
Yeah, it's not a ringing endorsement.
No, it's like, you got to go find a job. And people are like, no, we don't got a job for you. And then Harbaugh's like, oh, well, we tried. Like, that's not what I figured a Harbaugh approach would be.
No, I assumed it would be more cutthroat.
Literally, perhaps.
Yeah. After some of those games last year, yeah.
So, yeah, we're just not talking about football very much because, you know, I've been doing this for 14 years. I've seen one Ohio State victory. If there's something good that's happening, I'm going to focus on that.
Hey, it's basketball season, and the basketball team's good again.
And, you know what? Sometimes I need a mental health day.
And the hockey team.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk about that in a segment. But before that, we have an excellent gimmicky top five.
I grew up in a small town of Hazlitt, Michigan, and I witnessed a lot of great people making a lot of poor financial decisions. And I thought to myself, I don't want to be in that position. I don't want to have my retirement at risk. Over the last 17 years, my team has developed and refined our process, which helps people understand what's important to them and what they value most. And because people don't have pensions anymore, we're adding in multiple income streams during retirement. At Peak Wealth Management, our goal is to build long-lasting relationships. And we do that by building trust, by showing our integrity, and letting them know how much we care. And that's one of the most important things we do here at Peak, is understand your goals and help you get there.
Hi, this is Seth. So one of the things I didn't know when I wasn't a homeowner yet was that icicles are not actually pretty. They are actually a huge loss of energy from your house, or also a problem with your roof getting too much of the heat from your house. Anyway, that's one of the few things that I learned when Ecotelligent came over and looked at my place, and I think you should do the same thing, because it's going to save you a lot of money. Here's what you do. You call Ecotelligent Homes for a comprehensive home energy audit. They will find the sources of the issues, their licensed teams will install the fixes, they'll help you qualify for the right local rebates, and they even offer financing. Ecotelligent Homes is an award-winning DTE Energy and Consumers Energy trade ally. Call them at 248-291-7815. Or visit their website at ecotelligenthomes.com.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
To perform the Star Spangled Banner is an acclaimed singer, songwriter, actress, and 8-time Grammy Award winner from Hacienda Heights, California, Fergie.
Oh, say, can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly at the twilight's last gleaming.
So news broke this week that various sources in the FBI investigation of college basketball said that dozens of schools could be caught up in this. And like half of the top 16 seeds and multiple Hall of Fame coaches should be worried that this is going to burn their programs to the ground. And
Ann Arbor responded with a collective,
we're probably fine.
Yeah, I think we're good.
But we did want to take a look. Whenever these things happen, it's always good to look deep inside yourself and see what your flaws are. So we have come up with the top five things the NCAA would cite John Beilein for after they investigated his program top to bottom.
I mean, the NCAA's got some weird rules.
They
so,
do.
So you got to get out ahead of these things.
So, I mean, we're here and we're self-scouting and we're gonna lay.
I mean, this is what Michigan State failed to do. This is what we're trying to do. Cover all your bases ahead of time.
We are
get out in front.
Exactly. All right, answer number five.
Lack of facial twitch control. He's got that weird little thing he does with his lip. Where he kind of like chews on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if we're talking about John Beilein, these things are not going to be too serious, but
that could be bad.
Yeah, you know.
Because the NCAA prefers it if you have a screaming conniption fit and run onto the court.
Yes. So they like that.
That kind of reserve, it just has no place on the sidelines of an NCAA.
Yeah, too much wry smiling after after bad calls.
The occasional sarcastic clap.
Yes. I mean, there's just no place for that in the game.
Similarly, I have harming referee employment prospects as my number five, because everyone played like John Beilein. I don't think the game of basketball would actually need many referees.
No. You could call your own fouls. It'd be pretty obvious.
Because everybody would be like upstanding and morally upright, and then be like, yes, sir, I committed that foul. And there'd be one referee. We'd get him a beach chair and an umbrella and a daiquiri. And occasionally, he'd call a traveling.
And it would never be Ted Valentine, because we're not giving that man a beach chair and a daiquiri.
And, you know, in these days' economy, you have to have referees, I guess. So he's going to be... This is more of like a controlled economy version of the NCAA.
Yeah, this is more like John Beilein's hurting America.
Well, he is. Ace, you're number four.
Impermissible sub benefits, pretty self-explanatory. And probably on both of our lists, yes, which is definitely why I included it early. There is a strategy to gimmicky top five.
There is. Do the obvious ones first. Mine is a little bit out there, but I've suspected this for a long time, and the NCAA investigation will only prove it. John Beilein is D.B. Cooper.
Ah, that would explain a lot.
He is just the kind of man who would abscond from an airplane after hijacking it with lots of money and disappear into the woods, emerging only at a D2 college.
As a head coach. And this is why he's never been an assistant.
Exactly.
D.B. Cooper was an assistant somewhere.
I don't think D.B. Cooper is the kind of man who takes orders from anyone.
That's probably true. D.B. Cooper didn't work his way up the ladder. D.B. Cooper was like, I'm going to jump out of this plane and make my own ladder.
We often make like Breaking Bad references to John Billionaire because he's like
White.
He's like Walter White on the first episode of, but now we're going Mad Men with him, where he's got like a secret past identity.
Yes.
Where he's an airplane hijacker. Anyway, Ace, you're number three.
Instead of lack of institutional control, it's lack of hairstitutional control. It's gotten a little out of hand.
His hair.
Well, not Beilein's. Oh. The teams.
Oh, yes.
And kind of tied into that, there is a little bit of worry with the NCAA that they're going to get confused and think that Michigan's still playing DJ Wilson.
Or they're playing the Prince flunkies, who are definitely out of eligibility.
Yeah, those guys are out of eligibility, or that we've got some sort of cloning thing going on, which is probably not okay by NCAA rules.
No, cloning is not cool by the NCAA's rules, because they're the man. My number three is impermissible levels of sandwich artistry.
There it's, I mean,
which
that,
I thought was a much more elegant way to put
that. That was better phrased. I will give you that.
Now you've got like the idea that there, you know, Michigan comes in and there's like sandwich artists, like Mark Greger. They speak like Mark Greger because they're French, and they get like baguettes with Dijon on them instead of the yellow mustard that they get everywhere else. And that's such a recruiting advantage.
Yeah,
Michigan occasionally gets top 100 players.
Jordans and Dijon mustard.
Ace, you're number two.
I have unwittingly gives money to an Indiana bagman he thought really was a John Deere salesman.
It's because he's buying a John Deere.
Yeah, he thinks he's buying a John Deere, but it's actually a bagman for some like small town Indiana basketball player. And he's like, why is this John Deere so expensive? But this guy seems real nice, so I'm going to pay him anyway. Because so it's John Beilein. He doesn't know why the price jumped, but the price jumped. So he's paying the man.
So he's
He's got this John Deere, but he's also got this recruit who's got a bunch of stuff in his dorm.
This sounds like Zach Novak.
This might have happened. This might have actually happened. So we don't know. Although we're bagmen really associated with Zach Novak. I think this might be like a GR3. Like,
well, we had to get him away from Valpo. So, like,
I think this is how they got Glenn Robinson out of away from Purdue.
Other than the fact that they didn't offer him.
All right. That. That was dumb, Purdue. That was real dumb.
Well, you know.
But yeah, no. And I think John Beilein accidentally has an Indiana bagman.
Accidentally.
Yeah. He just thinks he's getting a not-so-good deal on lawnmowers, but he's got his guy, and the guy seems nice.
So your theory is that John Beilein went on The Price is Right. He would just be terrible.
Oh, yeah. I'm just like, yeah. I assume John Beeline just walks into a, like, wherever. Like, if he goes into a car dealership and the guy's like, this is the price, he's like, you seem like a very nice man. I will also take the coating. Thank you. That's a great suggestion.
So, like, they put up a toaster. It's like, how much is this toaster? And John Beeline is like, how much could a toaster cost? 10 bananas?
I was going to make the Arrested Development joke, and there it goes.
There you go. My number two is something Mo Wagner didn't do.
I like it.
All of his fouls! They're going to be like, Mo Wagner didn't start World War I. That's lack of institutional control. And they'll be like, what? He didn't do it. And they're like, we know!
But yet.
But we're still going to call it on you anyway. He hasn't really had that bad of a whistle this year. But I'm still mad about last year.
It's, you know, after a couple years of it, it builds up.
Yeah. Then they're letting him call people bitches on the court, so I'm fine with that.
Yeah. I'm glad we finally got that just out there. Yeah,
it's just happening. Like, this guy's a bitch, ref. And the ref's like, this segment is going in a good place. Ace, you're number one.
The auto bench in practice is actually in a broom closet.
Oh.
It's the Mike Leach.
I thought it was just going to be like auto bench. I'm like, yes, that is I would. I would cite John Beeline for auto bench.
See, I see John Beeline being the nicest man on our earth when it comes to everything except picking up fouls early in a basketball game.
That's true, yeah.
So there's just this hellhole of a broom closet somewhere in the William Davidson Player Development Center
where
he sends you when you get two fouls in the first half of a scrimmage.
But the punishment isn't that bad because there's like a Sega CD in there. He doesn't want to make it
too bad. I mean, of course.
But it's not a SNES. It's like a Sega CD.
And it's only got, like, the regular sandwiches instead of the fancy baguette and Dijon ones, you know?
My number one is making everyone else look bad.
I mean, if he's going to get cited for something, it almost has to be that.
We've been inside your program, and we have to tell you that if this comes out, we are all ruined. So stop doing that.
Yeah, instead of taking down the entire enterprise, it's just going to be you.
Yeah. I'm glad that, like, I feel utterly confident that this isn't going to boomerang back on us.
No, especially since we got the DB Cooper thing in there, so we've really covered a lot of, like, potential...
Oh, pitfalls?
Like, wowzer scandals in there.
Well, I just, you know, if there are many other schools that are probably like, yeah, we're probably fine, but, you know... Something could come out.
Yeah.
And they'd be like, oh, we shouldn't have done that podcast segment. I feel very, very confident that this one is not going to be like, Jayshon Tate isn't offensive rebounding as much this year. I really hope. I mean, it's John Beeline. It's fine.
Yeah. No, it's John Beeline.
All right. We're going to take one more break, come back, and talk about hockey.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well-known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
We have a lot in common. You rode the bus to Bursley, so did Larry Page, and so did I. And we all love MGO Blog. I'm Nick Hopwood, your MGO financial coach. My entire family went to Michigan State, but I was the smart one finding my way to Ann Arbor to study econ. I've been a financial planner for 17 years, earning the designation Certified Financial Planner, and founded Peak Wealth Management in Plymouth. Oh, you're pretty smart, and you probably have a sweet retirement spreadsheet already. My job is to make sure. As a financial coach, I make sure you're on track, or if you're not on track, I tell you exactly what you're going to need to do. And if you listen, I'll be able to tell you how your future should look, just like the knowledge. and I have cool charts and graphs to tell the story, sort of like the Mathlete. To learn more or schedule time to chat, check out peakwm.com/mgoblog.
If you find yourself on the wrong side of the law in Ann Arbor or around Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man in the huddle. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com.
Oh, I'm drunk and on a star. It hangs above just where I was, holding cold while watching over, keeping fold a midnight soldier. And oh, I'm drunk and on a star. Hangs above just where I was, going now, mouth full of laughter, eyes like beans, head full of dreams. Have you heard my guitar singing as it rises from the earth?
So Michigan sweeps Notre Dame, number one Notre Dame in hockey over the weekend, and we welcome in Dave Nasternak, who is our hockey correspondent.
How's it going?
Good. Michigan is now up to 11th in the pairwise, which, if the season ended today, would be a solid, no doubt, NCAA at-large bid.
Yeah.
Now, they still have to do a little bit of work to lock that down. First off is sweeping Arizona State. Arizona State is an independent. They're one of the worst teams in the country. You know, they're going to be on the road after a really long road trip. So Michigan, should be able to execute that, although they aren't a great scoring team. You know, they have some possibility of just kind of getting into one of those ugly kind of dogfights, and then you get the puck bouncing the wrong way.
Right. I mean, Arizona State's, like, advanced stat numbers are not great. And yeah, their pairwise are, I mean, they're literally like 53rd or something out of 60. Like that, yeah. So, and if you remember, Michigan last year went to Arizona State and played them in Arizona. And that was one of the few games where they had a higher Corsi score than their opponent. So, I mean, I'm not necessarily like super worried going into the weekend. I mean, you never know what can happen. And I'll look into some more numbers later in the week. But
they should expect to sweep.
Yes. It would be shocking if they tied one of the games.
Yeah. So if that happens, then I'm pretty sure that they are a lock for the NCAA. I have to run it again now that there's a bunch of other stuff that's happened, but like the worst case scenario is that they're like 13th, I think, if they sweep Arizona State and then lose their first round series 2-0.
Yeah, I remember you writing something about 13th or 14th. I'm not really feeling great about the 13th and 14th spots, personally.
Well, so there's one definite auto bid.
One for sure.
And then, you know, if you're 13th, then there have to be four auto bids handed out, which is pretty tough.
It's tough, but you're basically...
I don't think that's happened in the last 20 years I've been following the sport.
No, but the top 15 is pretty much pure NCHC and Big Ten. And there's maybe one to two teams from those other conferences. And while they are a couple of the better teams in each conference, you know, if you get an upset in that tournament, like we've seen teams go on runs, and you're basically pinning your hopes on Minnesota State winning the WCHA, and I believe it's Cornell winning the ECAC, if I remember, and both of the Boston teams.
ECAC? I've never heard ECAC.
ECAC?
ECAC, yeah.
Well, it looks, yeah.
ECAC sounds like a lot of things. Anyway.
Sounds like something you were doing a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, exactly.
And then neither of the Boston teams are in the top 15 in pairwise. And, you know, those teams and teams like Mass Lowell always do well in the tournament. And so pinning your hopes on, like, solely on Providence winning Hockey East is, you know, it could happen.
It could. That's
but
a good point. I had not thought about it like that.
Now you're, I mean, there's, I think that 13th, you have a decent shot, but anything lower than that, you're most likely going to get bumped, I would guess.
So still would be very good for Michigan to win their opening series. But let's talk about this Notre Dame series itself. So Michigan earlier in the year had a pair of 2-1 losses against Notre Dame where they played them basically dead even.
Yes.
And that was without their World Juniors contingent. They didn't get Lockwood back because he was injured, but they do get Hughes back. They do get Norris back. And both games this weekend followed a very similar pattern where Michigan absolutely dominates the first 15 minutes and Notre Dame kind of comes back in the last 5 minutes of the first period. And then the second period is pretty even.
The penalty period. In both games, well, there were penalties in those periods. If there were penalties, they happened in the second period.
And Michigan's penalty kill is just appalling and kind of gets Notre Dame back into the Friday game. And on Sunday game, they managed to hold them off. And then the third period on Friday was absolutely dominated by Notre Dame, and Michigan was just hanging on by the skin of their teeth. Not so much on Sunday, but Notre Dame did make a big push after they pulled their goalie and probably got 10 shot attempts in, like really late.
Yeah, at one point the shots were 37-27, I believe, Michigan, and they finished 37-34.
Yeah.
But it wasn't until probably the last 5 minutes, 4 minutes, and I think they pulled their goalie with about a minute and a half to 2 minutes left.
Yeah.
And it was essentially a power play. And what you would expect to see with Michigan on a penalty kill is essentially what those last 90 to 100 seconds were like.
And the thing that jumped out to me the most, especially Sunday, it might have been Friday as well, is I don't think I saw one odd man rush for either team. Like, there were a couple, like, maybe this was going to be a 3-on-2 that didn't really come out because someone was back-checking really hard or someone at the defensive blue line made a play. Like, I think Ciccone broke up what looked like was going to be a 3-on-2. Nothing really got into the zone. And I don't know if I've ever seen a hockey game without a true odd man rush.
I had each team having a 3-on-2 on Sunday.
Okay.
And they were...
I remember those kind of incidents, and then they didn't really turn into anything.
Right.
But that's still an extraordinarily low number.
Well, and that's kind of like what I said when I said things that they can't do this weekend. One is take penalties, and we obviously know that. And the other one is just stay home, because Notre Dame is not a great 5-on-5 offensive team. At least they haven't been against Michigan. Michigan's controlled the puck. And like Notre Dame scored 6 goals against Michigan in 4 games. 5 of those have been power play goals. So when you take that away from them or don't give them that extra attacker, you know, Michigan's done a good job. I mean, they've gotten chances, and they've hit a couple posts, and Levine's made some crazy saves. But you can say the same thing about Morris at the other end. And, like, they played them pretty straight up, and Notre Dame couldn't hit the net when they needed to when it was 5-on-5.
And just sort of the nature of both these games, I was thinking back to last year, and they would have just been annihilated by this team. Their discipline and their ability to take advantage of those opportunities, as you mentioned, when they have an odd man. I mean, Michigan would have given them up 8-10, and they wouldn't have been able to score very much, and it just would have been a bloodbath. So they've really come a long way to go toe-to-toe with this team, which is the number one team in the country. And, I mean, I think they outplayed them for a majority of the time in all 4 games.
It's funny because Brian Mack and Adam were talking about this on Twitter, and they were saying, you know, Brian was like, is this like a just a good matchup? And I was like, I think that it is, because Michigan has developed depth on their scoring lines, at least in terms of like forechecking and stuff. And like Notre Dame just cannot score in even strength. And Michigan is a team that wants the puck. Notre Dame, if you look at their Corsi numbers, they're farther down. So they don't necessarily have the puck a lot. So that fits what Michigan wants to do. And if they keep their defensemen home, that takes away those odd man rushes. And now all of a sudden, how's Notre Dame scoring? They don't really have the puck. They're not really catching you on the counter as much. So it ends up coming down to the power play. And if that's really, if Michigan had a good power play, or I'm sorry, a penalty kill, like it was one of their, if they could switch penalty kills, Michigan's probably 4-0 against Notre Dame this year.
And so that really, you know, kind of catapults them. They lock up a first round series at home, which is a big deal. And they, of course, put themselves in the conversation for an at-large bid. And, you know, going into this weekend, that was very much in question. So if they got swept by this Notre Dame team, you know, they would have had to They would have still been in the bubble even if they make the Big Ten semis. And that's tough because the Big Ten is not a, like the old CCHA where the team that you're drawing in the first round of the playoffs is like Fairbanks or Ferris. It's going to be a team that's on the bubble too. So they're going to get Wisconsin or Penn State probably.
Yes.
And Penn State is very much on the bubble, and Wisconsin is just outside of it. So, like, these aren't going to be pushover teams, and Michigan isn't at the spot where they can really, like, expect to win. Like, they'll probably expect that they have a better than even shot at winning, but it's not, like, 80%. So getting these games this weekend was absolutely huge.
Yeah, I don't necessarily expect them to sweep that first-round series.
Yeah.
I expect them to win it. I think that they can take two or three. I think they're a better team probably than all three of the teams that are below them. And I think that if you give them more chances, like a three-game series instead of just a one-off,
yeah.
You know, if Levine has a bad game or something. But, you know, they've consistent. I mean, they played Penn State really well, and they beat them three times. And the fourth time, they gave up a goal with like 45 seconds left or a minute left. So, and same thing with Wisconsin. Like, they should be 2-2 or 3-1 against Wisconsin. The same thing happened. And those were both early in the season games where that stuff isn't happening to this team as much. They're playing better. I mean, we saw this weekend. They're just playing better in their own zone. They're not giving up great opportunities the way that they were. They're not hanging Levine out to dry as much. And guys are just having to work really hard to get a good shot against Michigan.
And you're beginning to see them generate some offense with their forecheck and off the cycle. So before in the year, it felt like they were really heavily dependent on either the top line or just getting a rush. And you see now that they're able to generate some shots and some opportunities just by being really dogged. And that's where the goal on Sunday comes from, is that they force defenses on turnover from Notre Dame. And Danks forces it, goes right to Merity, and he's able to pop it to Calderon, and he gets it over the shoulder of Cale Morris. So that is something that I don't know how much it was going to happen earlier in the year, especially against a team like Notre Dame that quite evidently does not give up many defensive zone turnovers of that nature, just given by their goals per game.
And when you're talking about how far Michigan has come, like, that was something we saw repeatedly over the last couple of years, where even when they were good, they would still give pucks away like that. And now they've sort of flipped the script, and that's what they're doing to other teams, and they're doing it, and they're not even scoring goals every time, but like, they probably had forced 3 to 4 defensive zone turnovers in the first period and had good chances. I know I think it was Michael Pastajov had a really good opportunity. Norris lifted someone's stick and like walked right into the crease, and the puck rolled to the corner on him, but they're creating a lot of those opportunities. And the thing I wanted to say is, so Calderon scored on Sunday, but he also scored on Friday. And I didn't check this, but the analyst for BTN said that was his first goal since the previous Notre Dame series.
Yeah.
If that's true, like, Michigan's gone on quite a run, gone from 30-plus in pairwise to 11th now without their top goal scorer scoring a goal. I mean, that just shows you kind of the depth that they've created with guys like Josh Becker or everyone's calling him Josh Becker, Jack Becker.
Who's calling him Josh Becker?
Oh, the BTN guys. Anytime it's on TV, it's Josh Becker. So Jack Becker.
Maybe he prefers Josh.
The Pastajovs. And that second line of Slaker and Norris, they've moved Warren in and out of that line. Sanchez has had some run there. And guys like that are producing. So when you're getting 2 and 3 lines now, that teams just can't sit their top defensive pairing on one line anymore. Like, all of a sudden, you're being able to forecheck the bottom pairing of your defensemen and force turnovers.
Yeah, and it's actually unclear what Michigan's bottom pairing defense is.
On Michigan's side, yeah. At some point throughout the year, I feel like 5 of their defensemen, I've said to somebody, this guy's getting better. Like, look at Joe Ciccone. He's breaking up 2-on-1s all the time. Or Nick Boak is taking the puck in and moving guys off the puck. And even Luke Martin has looked really good, I thought, at times.
Even Luke Martin? He's a second-round pick.
Well, yes, but I mean, we've talked about guys like Ciccone and Hughes, and now you're starting to fill out the entire defensive roster and saying this guy is like improving, which, I mean, that's kind of what we wanted to see coming into the year. Was, you wanted to make the tournament, sure, but you wanted guys to get better from what last year was.
And I think this series is really validating for that, for the way they won it.
Yes.
So it's been, you know, going into the season, I was like, I just hope they're on the bubble. I hope they have some meaningful games at the end of the year. They did, and they won them. So good start for Mel Pearson, who had a similar impact his first year at Michigan Tech, and then they kind of went up from there as well. So next season, even though the talent level doesn't look like it's going to be overwhelming, they should at least maintain, and then hopefully we can have another era of excellent Michigan hockey.
Yeah, no, looks really good. And, you know, this team isn't done. Like, they're playing, things need to break their way, but they're playing, they can play themselves into a two.
That, I mean,
I ran some numbers last night, and they need the right breaks, but, like, Clarkson is free-falling. Minnesota has a tough series this weekend. Duluth is on the road. I mean, Michigan has to sweep Arizona State, but the teams in front of them that are not that far ahead of them have tough games. And then that's before the Big Ten tournament. So the way that they look and the way that they're playing right now, they could play themselves, if with a couple of wins and a couple of fortunate losses by other teams, they could easily play themselves into the top eight.
Yeah, and there's not a dominant team in college hockey this year. Like, Notre Dame has been number one in the pairwise for a large portion of the year, and we just saw what Michigan did to them. There's not like a peak North Dakota team out there or a peak BC team out there that, you know, you kind of look in the tournament and you're like, ah, I don't know, how are we going to beat these guys?
Yeah, I haven't seen much of St. Cloud State. I know that they've kind of run through a pretty good NCHC this year. Aside from that, like, teams that we thought, like Clarkson, were top five teams have just, I mean, that's part of it, is like they're starting to drop back to the point of where if they keep falling, Michigan, even though they lost them, could pass them.
Yeah, so it's if they make the tournament this year, it's a pretty wide open field, and we'll see how it goes from there.
Yeah, we've seen Michigan get in as a much lower seed and do some stuff. So
yeah, all right, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the MGO podcast. I am A. Sandbender, along with Brian Cook, and I'd just like to say you're welcome that we spent more time talking about John Beilein as D.B. Cooper instead of Jim McElwain.
Who's got it, baby?